Welcome to Layer Zero. Layer Zero is a podcast of unscripted conversations with the people that make up the Ethereum community. Crypto is built by code, but it's composed by people, and each individual member of the crypto community has their own story to tell. Cypherpunks understood that the code they write impacts the people that use it, and Layer Zero focuses on the people behind the code because Ethereum is people all the way down, and it always has been. Today, I'm speaking with Jonathan Mann, who might be known as the Song A Day Man. Jonathan Mann has been creating and singing and producing one song a day for a really, really, really long time, something like over 4 years now. And so we talk about, and I also discovered him for the first time in 2019 at ETH Denver, where he was kind of just an MC of sorts, and where he gave his talk about his journey of creating one song a day. And there's a number of these a day people that have gravitated in towards into crypto, Beeple being one of them, but there's others as well. Another previous podcast guest of Layer Zero, Justin Aversano, also took a picture of somebody's of someone on their birthday every single day for a year. And there's a conversation to be had about the relationship between creative output, hard just work, provably hard work, because if you do something one time a day for years, you know you're putting in the work, and also the power of assets, crypto assets. So we unpack that a little bit, and we also go into what Jonathan has been up to with his DAO, the Song A Day DAO. And so that'll be in the second half of the show. So let's go ahead and get right into it. I bring you Jonathan Mann right after we get to some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. If you're going bankless, you need MetaMask. This is your tool to unlock the world of DeFi without giving up custody over your private keys. MetaMask is both a secure in-browser wallet and also a secure bridge for your hardware wallet. You can now trade tokens on any DEX or aggregator. MetaMask Swap gathers real-time pricing information across all the DeFi exchanges, allowing you to select your best price while getting all the MetaMask benefits of self-custody, lower gas costs, and increased transaction success rates. MetaMask also has a fantastic mobile wallet that I use when I'm out and about, which I use to collect POAPs, NFTs, and do all my DeFi things while I'm away from home. If you haven't downloaded MetaMask, you gotta try it out. Web3 wouldn't be the same without it. Download MetaMask for desktop and mobile at metamask.io and load up your Trezor, Ledger, Lattice, or Keystone hardware wallets so that they too can get into the world of Web3. Living a bankless life requires taking control of your own private keys. Not your keys, not your crypto. That's why so many in the bankless nation already have their Ledger hardware wallet. But the Ledger ecosystem is much more than just a secure hardware wallet. Ledger is the combination of the Ledger hardware wallet, the Ledger Live app, and soon, the CL Crypto Life card powered by Ledger. The CL card powered by Ledger is a crypto debit card with powerful features like an instant exchange to fiat, where crypto assets are only sold at the moment that you swipe your card, and also credit from crypto collateral, where you can collateralize your crypto assets in order to get a higher credit limit. You'll be able to manage your CL card powered by Ledger inside the Ledger Live app, right next to all the DeFi apps and services that you're already used to using, making the Ledger Live app your one-stop shop for all of your financial needs. Go to ledger.com, grab a Ledger, and download Ledger Live to get all of your DeFi applications all in one place. So, you've got some money, and you want to spend.
Me shopping now, bro.
When you should be saving.
You'll never buy a house at this rate.
But what if you could spend and save at the same time? For the enlightened kind with inquiring minds, a new world awaits. Set yourself free with completely flexible, self-repaying loan technology. Supported on desktop and mobile, seize the power of Alchemix, allowing you to spend and save at the same time. Leverage your wealth without the risk of liquidation. Take out a loan that repays itself.
Yes!
What was once inconceivable is now within your grasp.
Are you winning, son?
Hey, Jonathan. What's up?
Hey. Good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm really good. The first time I ever discovered you was at ETH Denver 2019?
Oh. Yeah, 2019. Yeah.
Is that when you were like the MC of sorts?
I was the MC for like 1 minute. So what happened was they were trying to do like the judging of the hackathon. and all the judges were taking too long. And so John Paller of ETH Denver was like, Jonathan, like, go up on stage and do something. Stall them. And it just happened that I had my computer ready, and, like, I had this talk that I used to give all the time, like, ready to go. So I was like, I'm on it. And so, yeah. So that's probably where you saw me, if you saw me there at that time.
Right. You gave the talk about your story of making one song a day, which that story I don't think has stopped at all ever since then.
No. Song a day is nuts in that way, in that it's just kind of relentless. And, you know, that's literally 1,000 songs ago. That's how I think about it. That's 1,000 songs ago. 3 years is 1,000 songs. So that's pretty intense.
So most of these Layer Zero episodes, I start with somebody's backstory and then try and lead it into crypto. But with you, I actually kind of want to do the inverse because of just the nature of who you are. So let's start with crypto. How did you find crypto?
Yeah, that's fine. From listening to the podcast, I know that you came in around 2017 also. Uh-huh. That's my entry point. I was at a conference in Ontario at a summer camp, and I saw a talk by Ethan Buckman, who does Cosmos. He was just great, and I had never been interested in it before. It seemed like it wasn't really for me. It seemed like a finance bro kind of thing. It didn't really seem like it vibed with just didn't really see how it related to me. But something about his talk, and I can tell you exactly what it was. It was like, he explained proof of work in a way where I kind of got it for the first time, and I started, and then he also sang a song, which helped. Like, he had a little like ukulele and he was singing. It was great. And I had this really dumb thought, like, looking back on it, it's kind of dumb, but also it makes sense, which is like, oh yeah, proof of work. Like, I have that. Like I've been doing a song a day since January 1st of 2009. Like, that's my proof of work. Like, and then I was like, oh, like, is there some connection between like blockchain and my song a day project? And like, what could that be? And I talked to Ethan about it, and he was like really supportive. And then I got home and I tweeted, you could find the tweet. And I said, like, hey, like, does anyone know anything about the blockchain? Like, I have this crazy idea for a project. And my friend Boris reached out, sent me some ETH, said, go play. That was literally his words. And about a week later, he showed me CryptoPunks. And that was the moment. That was the real lightning strike moment for me, was seeing CryptoPunks at that time, which was, you know, like, maybe 5 months after they had launched. And it just blew my mind wide open.
Okay, so let's put a pin in that part of the story. Yeah. Now let's do Song a Day. How did you start doing Song a Day? What is Song a Day?
Yeah, Song a Day is an ongoing project where I write and record and make a video for a song every single day. And I've been doing that since January 1st of 2009. I started really just trying to go for a month. It was literally just 31 days that I was aiming for. Within that 31 days of January of 2009, I had a couple songs go kind of mini viral, and like, it just was going well, and I was unemployed. I was like 26, living in Berkeley. I had nothing else going on. And so I decided to try for a year. And then at the end of 2009, I just kind of decided to keep going and not stop. And that's how I'm here, you know, 4,766 songs in to the project.
But why?
Yeah. That answer has changed so much over the years. If you asked me back then, and people did, and this is the answer that I would give back then, is basically like, basically like talked about how, as a creative person who, I'd been writing songs since I was 12, and like, while I've always been somewhat prolific, there was a piece of me that would often run up against some kind of form of writer's block, where the problem with writer's block is like, you feel like you want to make something, you have like the urge to create, but nothing comes out, and that's very frustrating. And I sort of stumbled into Song a Day as like a just a writer's block proof method of creating. And that's like one, that's one reason that I used to give. And then another reason was, you know, to get attention. It's like, in this day and age, you need to have a hook. And like, that's my shtick. Like, hey, I'm up here doing a song a day. Like, that's just like a good shtick to have. That's another reason. But as time goes on, you know, it's become something quite different in a lot of ways. It's become almost like, I don't want to say spiritual, but it's become just a practice, you know? It's just become something that like there's a weight to like sitting down and just doing something every single day and doing it. And there's just like, I just find so many benefits that come out of it that it just has become part of my life. It's like part of the firmament of my existence now.
What are some of those benefits?
So the only way to get good at something, right, is to fail a lot, is to fuck up a bunch. And Song of Day is a really great framework for fucking up and for like making a lot of shit and a lot of crap that's bad, you know. And even for me, like doing that in public, for all these years, you know, they all live on YouTube. There's something about that that is humbling, I guess, but also teaches me a different thing, which is that like no one really cares whether you suck. You know what I mean? No one real, like there's haters and there's trolls and stuff, but like in the grand scheme of thing, like no one's really paying attention to you most of the time. And so like what's wrong with making something shitty on the way to making something good, and to not be afraid of that. So that's like a lesson that I learn over and over and over again. And then just in like a pure kind of practice way, I've just gotten better at things as a musician, as a producer, as a singer. I've just gotten better from literally doing it for 13 years, like every day. Yeah.
Do you feel like it takes a similar role in your life as perhaps like, you know, meditation or journaling does for other people?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I would say, you know, I again, like back in the day, I wouldn't have said that, you know, I wouldn't have like, that's not something that I set out to do. But looking back on it, especially now, you know, if you go onto songaday.world and like you just like shuffle through the songs, you know, you get a real sense of like of my life in a lot of ways. Like it is literally a record of my life. You know, there's people, you know, Ghazali just went viral for taking a picture of himself every day for 5 years. And my friend Noah Kalina has done that for like 21 years now. You know, there's something about like documenting yourself, documenting what's going on in your life every single day. That's really intense. And then, what was the other part? I don't remember what you just said.
I just asked if it feels the same niche as somebody who like meditates or journals.
Sure. The meditation part. Absolutely. In fact, like the one time that I feel free from anxiety, the one time that I'm like not anxious, well, it's two times. One of the times is when I'm sitting down writing my song. Like when I'm really lost in creating a song, and like in that state of flow, if you're familiar with that idea, the idea of flow is where you, the task that you're trying to do is right at the edge of what you're capable of doing. And, you know, you're pushing right up against that edge. That's when you get into that flow state. And I find myself in that all the time when I'm doing a song. It's never boring. That's not true. It's just boring a lot of times. But when I get into that zone, it's like it's and almost every day I can get there, even if it's just for a few minutes, if I don't have a lot of time to work on my song. But when I'm actually in it, it's the only thing I'm thinking about. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas all the other times of the day, I'm like anxious as shit about everything. but when I'm like actually in it doing my song, I'm so present like with the song. So in that way, I don't know if it, you know, I don't know if it, in the meditation sense, I haven't gotten as good at like taking the benefits of that, you know, taking that kind of, here-ness that I feel when I'm doing a song and applying it to other places. That's a sort of key of meditation, is like, you learn not only to do it when you're sitting there, but also you're just like standing there doing the dishes and you sort of notice yourself like, whoa, here I am. That is a, that's, I think that's a different muscle than this one, but for the purposes of like an everyday moment when I am just here with myself, Song a Day, I would say, fills that for sure.
I'm sure there's got to be like days where, I don't know, it's in the last part of the day and you're like, damn, I haven't done my song today. God damn it. I just have to bang this song out. How often or how do you get through those days?
Yeah. Yeah. So, by giving myself a lot of leeway, basically, I call those phoning it in days where sort of to what I was saying before is like, no one fucking cares. No one cares. If you're going to phone it in one day, who the fuck, who gives a shit? And so ultimately I give myself a lot of latitude to just suck. If I need to suck on at a particular time, that's cool. That's all right. And so I'll phone it in. I'll literally just like improvise a song on the spot. There's days when I put like as little effort as possible into it. The other thing that I've learned about that though, what's wild is, another term I have for it is like these songs that I just sort of poop out. Like the songs that I just sort of poop out in those times when I'm like, I don't feel inspired whatsoever. And I'm like you said, end of the day, I'm exhausted. You know, especially my kids are, you know, 4 and 7, but when they were infants, forget it. I mean, that's like when you have an infant in the house. But what I found is like oftentimes those songs, they still resonate with somebody. Uh-huh. Somebody still hears it and says, wow, I really like that one. Or like, wow, that one really hit me at the right moment or whatever. So who the fuck knows? Like, I'm not, you know, we're like not the best judges of what we make. And it's easy. It's so easy to get in your head about like, is this good? Is this bad? When the fact of the matter is what you think about it kind of doesn't matter, because somebody else is going to think something completely different about it.
There was a podcast that Ryan and I did, a Monday podcast, like one of the big ones, and yeah. I won't name the guests just because of the nature of the story, but yeah. Both, as soon as we got off of the podcast, him and I were both like, oh God, that podcast was awful. Like, do we even release that? Like, that was so bad. And we just didn't have enough time to like scrounge up another podcast in time, so we released it. And it turned into being a number 3 most downloaded podcast in that spot for a really, really long time. And we got so much positive feedback about it. And we just learned a lot about ourselves. Like sometimes like what we think is good and what the enjoyment that we got out of it is just not at all what like everyone, all the listeners get out of it.
I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me where like songs that I think are great and I'm like really excited by do nothing, and then songs that I literally put no effort into, people are like, this is the best, I love this one. Like, you know, there's a famous story about how like Tom Petty wrote Free Falling, uh-huh. where it was like he was just trying to make everybody laugh. Like he was singing this song and he's just like making up the lyrics and he's like, she's a good girl, crazy about Elvis, and everyone's like just cracking up about it, and it turns into like literally his biggest song ever.
You know
there's something about you know, a lot of people will say like, oh, you gotta like, to make good art you have to like be all emotional, you have to put your emotions into it, it has to be like this deep thing. That's bullshit. Like, you know what, if you sit down to try to be emotional, you know, if you mm-hmm. sit down and you're like, I'm going to write an emotional song, you know, and I'm going to make it all come out, you put a lot of pressure on yourself to like to live up to that. Whereas if you just sit down and you're like, I'm just going to write something, let's see what comes out, you're not putting any pressure on you. And that's when you can just like open up and let something come, you know, mm-hmm. that's how I see it.
I don't think you can actually like go for emotion, right? Like that's not something that you can optimize for.
No.
Right? You can't just decide that you're going to be emotional today.
Exactly. And sometimes you feel emotional and sometimes you're able to, like, to channel your emotions. But on days when you don't, to try to do that, you know, is fruitless, I think. But also on days when you don't, there's a lot of power in just sitting down and showing up.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any of like your favorite songs that you've written, either judged by the output of the songs that you created or the process of you making them?
Like a lot of the stuff I'm most proud of making are on like albums and things that I've done. Like a big part of what I do with Song of Day is I go back and kind of mine the songs for things that I think could stand to be polished, you know, because a lot of times what comes out of Song of Day sort of is, you know, ultimately like a demo in a lot of ways. So I put out an album like 2019 that I'm really proud of. And I did this narrative fiction podcast called Songonauts, and the music for that I'm super, super proud of as well. So those would be, I'd say, like the ones that I'm like most, because I put so much work into them. To talk about like the process, like I really honed and tried to get to the heart of like what each song was. And so yeah, that's definitely what I'm most proud of, I'd say, or the ones I like the most.
So picking up the crypto thread, crypto is a very interesting industry. Do you think that like you've used crypto just as like inspiration to like, yo, crypto has so much content inside of it. Like I can just get a lot of inspiration for my songs. Crypto is going to make writing about songs so much easier. Are these some of the thoughts that went through your head?
No, but I, in my life, you know, because Song a Day is just part of my life, like I said, the firmament of just what I do, anything that I get into, I end up folding into Song a Day, right? So you can look and like on, I think it's September 17th of 2017, I wrote a song about CryptoPunks because I was just so into CryptoPunks. And that's just sort of naturally what I do, you know? I wrote a song about Dada, like Dada, the Dada art people I wrote a song about. And I did a song about, what's another one? I did several CryptoKitties songs back then because I was just so excited about NFTs. They weren't called NFTs back then, but like that's what I was excited about. And so that sort of continues now, where now I'm like really deep in this space. And so, yeah, there's just so many different things to write about. I'm working on, today I asked Twitter what to write about, and some people said, and I also put, I said, what should my song be about? No shilling was the, and then like, because I didn't want people to come in and be like, write a song about this project, my project, this project.
Write a song about my bags.
Yes, exactly. And so several people were like, no shilling. That's a great song. That's a great. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right.
That is a great song.
That's a fun one. So that ended up being a song. And that's, you know, oftentimes like there's so many projects in the space that I just love, you know, that I'm like really aligned with philosophically and just that I'm such a fan of, and I'm gonna write a song about all of them eventually, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's just sort of like got a lot of songs to write, so why not write them about things that I enjoy?
One of the more recent songs in your trajectory that you've written is the ENS DAO one.
Yeah,
that was super catchy, by the way. I posted that into a couple of my Discords, like, yo guys, like, look at what the energy of ENS DAO created. Like, we have, you know, singer songwriters writing songs about it, but also listen to how catchy it is. And also I think a little bit of what's going on here is you're becoming a bit of a storyteller, or you have been, right? You're like, so much of the story of ENS got baked into that song.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me reaching for something when I kind of say like the vibe of the song is also part of the vibe of ENS, like the melody and the tune is very, very ENS like, but right, also just straight up the lyrics were illustrating two people about what it was. Yeah. And the fact that like somebody would write a song about ENS DAOs, it's not like you wrote about like Coinbase or insert your equity company here or, yeah. or yeah. you know, like shillmybags.com. You wrote about ENS DAO, a community project. And so that is also part of the story. Do you see yourself as a little bit of a storyteller in like these short little snippets of songs?
That was my job pre-pandemic. That was literally my job. The reason I had, you know, when you saw me at ETH Denver, the reason I had this talk all ready to go is because I would go around to conferences, give that talk, and then watch all the other talks at the conference and get up at the end of the day and recap everything that everyone said. And that was literally, that's what I was doing. Like, I was doing like maybe like 15 of those a year. And like, that was my main job. Right up until the pandemic. So yeah, that's a huge part. And stories are compelling, and I find obviously, that's sort of a dumb sentence. Stories are compelling. Yeah. But like the stories that are within the stories and lore of this culture, I'm sure like every culture has amazing stories and lore. And so because I'm so steeped in this one right now, I can't help but just be attracted to the different narratives that are popping up. You know, for a long time it was all about CryptoPunks for me, and like the different kinds of like I wrote a song about Snowfro, you know, who made art blocks, his burned zombie punk. Like he accidentally burned a zombie punk, which I love. Like there's a great story about like how that happened, and even the story of how he made art blocks, where he sold a bunch of his really valuable punks to fund art blocks, and then art blocks becomes this amazing, like that's just a great story, you know. There's all these amazing stories in the space, and so ENS DAO is just one of those stories, you know. It's just like what an amazing project, and what an amazing kind of like coming to fruition of something in the space. And so it was a no-brainer for something like that to write a song. Whereas like, you know, not to shit on this or anything, and I absolutely do not mean to do that, but like everyone's like, when are you going to do a song about Irene DAO? And I'm like, I'm not sure what the story is there necessarily. If there's a story there that pops up, then I'll be compelled. Whereas with Ghazali, did you see Ghazali, this kid who took a picture of himself every day? So there's this kid from Indonesia who took a picture of himself every day for 5 years and made a PFP project basically by accident. It's great. And like, so that to me, it's the guilelessness of him that like makes it compelling. And he became like an instant meme overnight. And that to me was like so compelling. And I was like, he has this long history of like all these other people who have done picture a days things, and like that to me is an interesting story. So that's something that I'm going to write about. There's just a lot. There's just so much in the space to do.
I feel like there's enough people at this point in the world doing one thing a day that could turn into a DAO.
Thing a day DAO. Yeah.
Oh, is that a thing?
No, it should be.
Yeah,
it should
right. Be. For the all the people that do one thing a day and have been doing so for a while, like, we should get all those people in the same Discord.
I've always had a fantasy of doing a conference that was just a conference where all the speakers were people who do things a day, you know? Because there's a ton. There really are. Like, I find out about new ones all the time. Like, like people show me folks who are doing it. I'm like, I didn't know this person existed. Yeah.
Is there like a thing a day community out there? Just like all the people that know all there? No,
there isn't. I mean, you know, when we find each other, I think we feel some kind of kinship. Sure. I know. So Noah Kalina entered the space recently, and he's gone viral many times for his a picture of himself a day thing. And I knew of those, and I'd been following the project. But we were able to connect over crypto because he started messaging me asking about Song a Day and NFTs. And it's great, you know, it's just great to connect with people who do it because they sort of understand things on a really specific level.
So there's another Layer Zero that I did with Justin Aversano, who took a photo of somebody's birthday every single day for a year.
Oh, wow.
So like You have the challenge of you need to output like a couple minutes of creative output every single day. His challenge was that he needed to go find somebody whose birthday it was every single day for a year, which is a very different challenge.
Yeah.
There's just something about doing something a day that was people find really compelling. And like the cool thing about Justin's story was that I don't think you could have taken any single one of his photographs and created the value that he got out of the whole entire thing, right? Like, his photographs are great, but like, it's not one photograph isn't going to do it. It's the fact that he did something every single day for a year, which was challenging, that created the story, that created the total like valuation of his combined work. Like, why do you think humanity – and one of the things that I think is cool about humanity and crypto assets is that, like, we actually find ways to put market value upon the things that we value. And all of a sudden, there are these people out there that are doing these a-day things, and they're gravitating towards crypto to be able to find a price tag for these things, a valuation for these things. But before we get to the crypto part, like, why do you think humans value the a-days, the people that do things a day, and, like – Why do we like that?
Because we die.
Mm.
We like it because we die. We like it because time is literally the most scarce thing that we have. And the everydayness of something is a reminder of that. It's sort of it's the most grounding kind of way of structuring something. And so I think a lot of it has to do with death. It has to do with like our connection to the fact that we have only so many of these days on the planet. And that ties right into crypto, honestly, because what you have and what you have with NFTs especially is you have this artificially scarce thing, right? Because in the real world, everything is scarce just by its nature. That's just how the real world operates. But in computer land, as we know, like, you know, things are infinitely perfectly replicable. And so we have suddenly this way of making digital things scarce, which is holy shit. That's like amazing. But then we have to confront this idea of, well, what does that mean? Like, how can we make something digitally scarce in a way that feels legitimate, that feels true? And, you know, we would talk about this kind of shit all the time back in the old days, you know, back in 2017, 2018. And a lot of it was sort of theoretical, whereas, like, you know, on my podcast, Digitally Rare, we would often say that, like, you know, for this to work, there's going to have to be a really strong narrative. Like any project that's going to succeed is going to need a really clear story about like why it exists, which is not true. That's not turned out to be true at all. That was a theory that we were sort of working on back in the day before there was very many projects. But, you know, ultimately we are still confronted by what is, and we're so early that actually we don't really know the answer, because in the long term, 10 years from now, you know, who knows? But when we're confronted with the idea of this artificial digital scarcity, what can make that feel real? One of the things that we're seeing now is that, you know, OG projects, you know, and depending on how you, that's one way actually to value something, because it came before all the hubbub and, you know, it's scarce. But the fact is, you know, when Larva Labs decided to do 10,000 CryptoPunks, they could have easily have decided to do 5,000 or 20,000 or infinite, I mean, near infinite CryptoPunks they could have done out of those combinations. So it's sort of an accident that they chose 10,000. In a lot of ways, you know, to me, that's a really interesting philosophical thing, is how do you ground this artificial scarcity in something that feels real? And doing something once every day is one way to ground it. Time. Put it in time. My compatriot, Matt Condon, one of the many Matts, is also obsessed with this question, and he's come up with two other really great ways that I love. And so one is that you may have heard of this. He has a chip in his hand. Do you know about this?
Yes, I've met him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Matt has a chip in his hand where you scan it with a near field communicating thing, NFC, and it gives you an NFT. So the scarcity comes from proximity to him. Whoa, that's really cool. And his new one is even cooler, where he sleep talks. Have you seen this? Aleatoric. So Matt found out that he sleep talks, and so he decided to make this NFT project where when he sleep talks, his phone records it. It gets translated. It gets like Google translated into text. The text gets fed into an AI thing that shows it as a visual thing, and that gets sold as an NFT on Zora. And so the scarcity of this project, he has no control over how many are going to happen. It only happens when he sleep talks, which, you know, there's been months now where he hasn't. He set up this whole project, he was sleep talking all the time, and then he set it up and he hasn't been sleep talking, which is just fascinating. So that's another way of creating real scarcity in this digital realm. You know, so that I find all of those experiments like the most fascinating.
Can you elaborate on the relationship between scarcity and market value of assets, and what the blockchain has to do with that?
Yeah, although, you know, I'm skeptical of most of the ways that people use scarcity to assign value to most NFTs. Because it all feels so arbitrary to me. So
let me actually ask that question slightly differently. Can you elaborate on the relationship of the scarcity of human time and labor and creativity?
The
market value of assets on public blockchains.
Yes. 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 Well, that to me is way more interesting than, you know, the other thing that I was thinking when you were saying that is like, you know, this one has like lasers shooting out of his eyes, and that may, right. And that's rare. It's like, okay, right. Really? Why? Right.
I could just go mint 100 ERC-20 tokens and say it's scarce.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It needs to have when I didn't realize this for a long time. When, like, you know, when projects are choosing like Bankless, how did you decide how many tokens to make? What was your rubric?
A billion is a big number.
You just pick the number. Like this to me, like I didn't realize, like, you mean there's no, and people were saying like, of course there's no, it's just, you can make up any number. It's just whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, right. Oh man, that's crazy. And so like ETH Denver, you know, they decided to do like the length of Colorado or something, and the mm-hmm. height of the mountains, and they multiple, like, but in terms of like, yeah, labor and time, and putting that into, I don't know, I don't think that right now we are at the point where we are ready to actually value these things correctly in the NFT space. I think that there's too much froth, and there's still too much like wild westness of it. But I think there's a chance that like over time, NFTs can become... It's not going to be perfect. I don't think it's ever going to be perfect. I don't think it's like a panacea in any way. It's not going to like solve this. But I think that it has a chance to be a really powerful tool for rewarding creative work in a way that hasn't existed before, and certainly hasn't existed for the last 20 years. And we, you know, when I come at everything thinking specifically about music. And what's crazy about music is that, you know, prior to the invention of recorded sound, music was ultimately extremely scarce in the sense that the only way to hear it was in person when someone was playing it for you. Like, that's crazy. And then suddenly we had this ability to copy it, and we lived through this sort of golden age of musicians being able to get paid for their work because it was copyable, but not infinitely copyable yet. And that was one age. And now, and then for the last 20 years, we've been in a completely different place where the value of music just plummeted. It went away completely. And I don't think NFTs or digital scarcity is going to solve that, but I think it has a potential to be this really powerful tool to help alleviate some of that. And I don't know how much of it has to do with scarcity or not. I think that sort of still remains to be seen. I wouldn't be surprised if everyone's obsession, if our cult, our crypto culture's obsession with scarcity itself becomes not the thing. I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of goes by the wayside. And ultimately, we settle into something that's more just about like another way to show your appreciation and support for a piece of art. But yeah, I think the speculation has to, the like wild rampant speculation has to die down for that to happen. Sure. And that honestly did happen, you know, 2018, 2019, things died down so much. And, that's when so many interesting things, came about in that space.
That's definitely true. And that time was for DeFi really, where like we had like early DeFi, which were ICOs before we called it DeFi, and then it went away. And then we actually had true DeFi come after the fact.
Right.
And so like we're having this first NFT frothy movement in 2020, 2021. And there's a ton being built right now, but you still that a lot of that froth hasn't left the market quite yet.
No. And it will eventually, I assume.
Hey guys, in the second half of the show, we get into the subject of the Song A Day DAO, which is the DAO that Jonathan has spun up to help manage the funds of all the money that is raised from his Song A Day sales, and other conversations around this topic as well. So let's go ahead and get there right after we get up to some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. Polygon is Ethereum's largest and most vibrant scaling solution to date. With millions of monthly users and all of the biggest DeFi apps, the Polygon ecosystem has turned into a blossoming metropolis of DeFi activity. Transactions on Polygon are quick and cheap, allowing users the freedom to achieve their DeFi goals, all while being economically anchored to Ethereum. But Polygon isn't just the proof-of-stake sidechain. The Polygon team is building a suite of scaling solutions, including Polygon Hermes, Maiden, Nightfall, and Zero, all with different design choices in order to be optimized for all possible crypto use cases. If you're a developer who wants to build on the Polygon ecosystem, go to the link in the show notes to check out their fantastic documentation. And if you're a user who just wants to experience fast and cheap DeFi, you can bridge over your ETH or other tokens and start playing around with any of the thousands of applications that are available on Polygon. The Layer 2 era is upon us. Ethereum's Layer 2 ecosystem is growing every day, and we need L2 bridges to be fast and efficient in order to live a Layer 2 life. Across is the fastest and cheapest and most secure cross-chain bridge. With Across, you don't have to worry about the long wait times or high fees to get your assets back to the Layer 1. Assets are bridged and available for use almost instantaneously. Across's bridges are powered by UMA's Optimistic Oracle to securely transfer tokens from Layer 2 back to Ethereum. Across is critical ecosystem infrastructure, and ownership is being handed over to the community. You can be a part of this story of Across by joining the Discord and becoming a co-founder and helping to design the fair launch of Across. If you want to bridge your assets quickly and securely, go to across.to to bridge your assets between ETH, Optimism, Arbitrum, or Boba networks. Bankless is proud to be sponsored by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum that lets you trade any token at the current market price. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. The Uniswap Grants Program is accepting applications for grants. Do you have something of value that you think you want to contribute to the Uniswap ecosystem? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a unique grant at uniswapgrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless.
My hot take that I think is true is that these a dayer artists, people that do things every single day, find crypto sooner than all the other artist types of the world. Do you think that's true, and then why?
I think that, I don't know if it's true that we find it faster. I know that, I feel like we, maybe we get it faster. I feel like as soon, like I said, as soon as I was like properly explained what proof of work was and how that operates, it really fit for me. And then seeing CryptoPunks, 10,000 CryptoPunks, 3,000 songs, you know, there's 10,000 of those. There's as many of I can make until I die of these. Like, it just, there's something that sort of like, there's something that clicks in that realm. It's hard to know now because now there's quite a few of us thing a day people who are doing it. Although it's worth noting that, like, you know, Beeple, when he came into the space, unless I'm wrong about this, he didn't like make it into something that had to do with his everydays. It wasn't like he put out all of his everydays. He was like much more curated about it. And it was like, here's this everyday and here's that everyday. And then, you know, he did his big sale, but that was like all of his everydays all at once. It wasn't quite the same kind of like, here, you know, here's the group and I'm going to put them all up for sale. I think that it's the people that get, at least from the NFT side, the people that get it the most are the people who have been robbed of the ability for their artwork to be valued. And Beeple was a prime example because, you know, he makes these really cool images and there's just no way to monetize those in a way that is, you know, clearly what they're worth. And, you know, I talk to Eclectic Method all the time and, like, you know, he was tired of DJing. He's like, that's how he had to pay his bills. But all he really wanted to do was make, like, cool little 3D music pieces. And, like, who the fuck wants a cool little 3D music piece? Like, what are you going to do with that? You can't do anything with that. But now you can. And those are the places, those are the spaces where I think people ultimately really get it, is where the thing that they make has no, like, place to live, you know, has no place to like really reside, which is true of me, you know, like I writing a song a day for 13 years, putting them all on YouTube, that's not a living, you know, that's not even like an eighth of a living, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why it was, I think it's maybe less to do with the everydayness and it's more to do with like the lack of value put on the stuff that we create.
I'm glad that you took us here because if you hadn't, it was going to be my next question because there's something I'm trying to circle around, and I think it's time that we descend there. You started off with talking about the connection between what you're doing and proof of work, and in another way, like one of the ways that I like to explain proof of work to people that are asking like the 101s is like I point at the Egyptian pyramids, because when you go to the Egyptian pyramids, like it's a proof of work. Like, you know that that took a lot of work. Like, you don't have to verify it. You know that it's true. You just have to look at it. And so that's one of our early OG like proof of works. Like, if aliens came to planet Earth, they could see the pyramids and be like, oh, that took a lot of work.
It's very obvious.
And then they can go to your YouTube channel and see your upload rate, and it's like, oh, one song, one a day. They're all unique. They're all different. Oh man, that took a lot of work. And you're telling me that like all these a-dayers, these creative a-dayers, are finding crypto because of an insatiable and some sort of need to fill a monetization niche. And one of the fascinating aspects, I've already said this once before and many, many times throughout the Bankless ecosystem, like one of the cool things that really makes me bullish about crypto is that in Ethereum specifically, the ability to tokenize stuff tokenize stuff on open public permissionless networks that allows the whole entire globe to come and impart their perceived value upon these things, that we now have ways to produce market assets, financial assets, that more closely align with our human values. So we have the market value of our assets more closely aligned with our human values. And so I think we have like these creative a-dayers that are putting in the work that is verifiable and that's backed by time. You have provably burnt time to produce this output.
Yeah.
And like maybe it's not a financial asset like staked ether is, or a bond, a treasury bond, But at some point, like, it doesn't matter because so many things in so many market, the value of our market assets are perceived, right? We have these narratives of like the price to earnings ratio or price to sales ratio. And that's a fundamental valuation, but it's also perceived.
Yeah.
And then we start to zoom out a little bit and you're like, oh, well, what else is perceived? Like a Monet is also perceived, but no one's going to like argue with you about like the value of a Monet. And at some point, like what's really happening here is like, cause we have so many creatives out there in the world burning their time in the same way that proof of work miners are burning their electricity to produce some sort of creative output. And you don't need like a whole entire financial system to agree upon, oh yeah, this token has strong fundamentals. You just need 100 people or 1,000 people to be like, yo, like the waveform of this guy's like sleeping words is like kind of unique. I guess I'll pay a couple $100 for that. Right. And all of a sudden, like we have enough people to like support up these creators. And the only thing that the creators really need to do is provably burn their time in honest and real fashion.
Yeah, and just to keep doing what they've been doing all along anyway. And I think that gives it another layer of legitimacy, I think, you know, where you look at someone who's been doing it every day anyway or has been creating their songs, even if they're not doing it every day. They're just, you know, someone like Latasha who's been, like, putting in the work for years and years and years. So many people in the space doing that. You can see that there's – you can't fake that, right? So, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I love that. I take a pretty like measured approach to this. And like I said, I think it's more for me. It's just like it's gonna be another tool in the toolbox. Ultimately, same with DAOs. Same with everything. Like ultimately. They're all just going to be like this really cool tool that we can use where appropriate to make cool shit. And it's fun. I have I keep getting calls from far flung friends now who like, dude, tell me about NFTs. You know, that's happening more and more now.
So, but when you discovered Ethereum and crypto and NFTs before they were called NFTs, you didn't really see this as like, this is how I can monetize my Sangha days. You were just drawn to it for whatever reasons?
No, I was immediately. I was I immediately saw it as, there's like a video that I found actually. We can maybe share it in the show notes. A video of a talk that I gave in 2017, not long after I had discovered CryptoPunks, where I lay out the entire Song a Day NFT project in 2017. Like I didn't know this video existed. My friend had sent it to me. And I give a talk about CryptoPunks. I'm like, here's these CryptoPunks. Aren't they so cool? Like, and I point to this zombie one. I'm like, this one, for instance, like there's only blah, blah, blah of these. And so it's really rare. So it's very valuable. See, it's $333. Somebody's willing to pay $333 for this zombie. But then after I talk about that, I'm like, oh, and like, here's what I want to build on top of that with Song a Day. And from the very beginning, I saw it as like this way that maybe if I could be putting out my song every day and even just making like $100 or something, somebody paid me like $100 in ETH every day for my song, I'm going to come out so far ahead than if I wasn't able to do that. And that was like the impetus for me from the very beginning. Was the monetization part, And then the further I got down, like just like you said, you start going down these rabbit holes and you start discovering like, oh right, everything is made up. Like everything is completely just made up. It's all stories like entirely down. It's all memes.
All the way down.
It's all stories. And so that's mind blowing. And then. And then back in those days too, there was so nobody. I've heard you talk about this too. Like, even Vitalik, like nobody got NFTs. Nobody gave a shit about NFTs or understood. And there was a small group of us, like me and like the Dada people and the Super Rare guys, and Jason Bailey from Art Gnome. There was a bunch of us in New York, and we would have all these meetups, and we would just. get together and just like geek out about NFTs and digital scarcity. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. That was a really nice time. That was like a really like warm, fuzzy feeling time for me because it was like, it seemed like endless possibilities at that point. It was like, we don't know what we're doing. And if you know, but a lot of it holds up. A lot of the things that we wrote back then, a lot of like the podcasts we did, it holds up. We called this, I think, in a lot of ways. Like we called the NFT what would be compelling about NFTs.
So what was the original monetization plan for your song a day with using NFTs, and how did it start and did it change over time?
It did change over the time, but the basic idea, again, you can go watch this video. The basic idea is exactly the same from the very beginning. Take CryptoPunks, make it into song a day. Like that was my goal from the very beginning. And what's so funny is that like...
But not that, the generative aspect, right? Like not
there
like,
is there is even the generative aspect. Oh, really? You've seen it. Well, because there's the images. I hired a different illustrator for each year of Song a Day, and they each made layers of the illustrations, which is like old hat now, right? Like now that's just like, oh yeah, of course you would do that.
Right. That table stakes.
You know, but back then it was like really like I had to explain it. It was like really hard to explain to anybody. It didn't make any sense. But I was like, but look at CryptoPunks. Now imagine that. And each song has an image. It's generated from these layers, and each layer, each year is done by a different person. And I did all that. Like that ended up being my project, and that was there from the very beginning. Each CryptoPunk has all these traits. And again, the traits are like, yeah, of course you're gonna have traits. Like, what, your thing isn't gonna have traits? But it was like, no, you don't understand. Like, no one got it. They're like, traits? What are you talking about? Traits? What are traits? No. So like there's a location, like I sing my song and like there's a topic and there's like there's all these different traits of the songs. And they're like, what are you saying? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But from the very beginning, that's just what it was. It was just take CryptoPunks and map it onto Song a Day. And the main thing that changed actually was the DAO. The main thing that changed from then to now was seeing some of the amazing experiments, specifically like Nouns DAO and the song that owns itself, and those blowing my mind in a whole new way, and deciding to like bring that part of it and glomming that onto the Song a Day NFT project that I had been building for forever anyway. So that's the main thing that changed was bringing in the DAO aspect.
Yeah. So what's the state of the Song a Day project now? Like as of right now, where is it at?
So it was a ton of work. It was like ridiculous amount of work to get this project going. I spent probably like $600,000, maybe more total, building this project, which is like more than I normally make. I up until this year, I made about $100,000 a year for the last 10 years. That's been my where
basal,
I've been
basal level. Yeah,
so the idea that I spent like 6 years worth of that just this year just in creating this project and funded through this other project I made called Fucking Trolls, which is a PFP project making fun of other PFP projects.
I have to look at this. I did not know this.
many people sell their trolls for zero, so you can get some, which is just glorious. It's just wonderful. But we made a shit ton of money off Fucking Trolls. I made a shit ton of money off of just selling random NFTs this year, and I was able to finally fund this project that I'd been dreaming of since 2017. I hired 13 different illustrators. I paid them each like $50,000 to make. Ultimately, they made around 1,200 layers all combined. I hired Raid Guild, which is a wonderful DAO collective of people who you can hire them to just slay your project. They call it Slaying Dragons, and build it. So they did all the Solidity work and all the front end work and all that kind of stuff. And we launched on December 31st, and it sold out. Like roughly 4,000 songs sold out in like an hour and a half, which was amazing. That's a whole other story of like how that happened. Very specific to crypto story, actually. We can get into that if you're interested. But now what's been happening since January 1st, and this has always been part of the plan, is that I've been selling my songs on my website, songaday.world. Every single day, there's a new song. It's being auctioned each day. And all the money from those auctions goes to the DAO now. And so the DAO has roughly, I don't know, 31 ETH now in its treasury just in like the last 16 days, 17 days. And that will go on, you know, indefinitely. Every day, I'm just going to sit down, do my song like I always have, and tokenize it, sell it. You know, we're going to see each other at ETH Denver, right? So, like, I'm hosting the Shelling Point conference that Iwaki is doing, Iwaki and Simona. And so I have this plan where I'm hoping, I don't really know if they're going to let me do this, but like my idea was I'm going to bring each of you up on stage with like a little verse of a song that I'm going to write about you. And I'm going to have you stand there while I sing your verse. And then I'm going to stitch all these verses together. And that's going to be my song for the day. And then that song is going to get sold on my website. It's going to be tokenized and auctioned off. And that money,
I'd imagine there's going to be some bids for that one.
I hope so. And so that will, you know, that money goes to the DAO. And it's fun. It's been super fun. People are coming into the DAO. We're still getting our feet under us. Like we're working on, the voting of how we're going to do voting. Cause the way we're doing voting is one person, one vote. We don't have a token. We just have the NFT. There's no token in this DAO yet. Maybe someday.
And it's an NFT curated DAO rather than a DAO about an ERC-20 token. It's if you own one of the songs of a song a day DAO.
If you own one of the songs, you are eligible to be in the DAO. The only thing you have to do to become fully in the DAO is to get verified on Bright ID. Mm-hmm. And then you can vote once you're verified with Bright ID. And that's what we're trying to do right now. It doesn't actually exist. This is like we're hoping to make this like a public good thing that doesn't exactly exist yet, which is a snapshot instance or whatever you call it that has Bright ID as part of it, so that you can have a snapshot where you're sure that everyone who's voting is a person. Every single person who's voting is one person, which not a lot of projects are doing currently because it doesn't exist. And that's what we're building right now. And it's cool, man. It's like, it's crazy. It's a crazy world. And I'm just so like excited and as jazzed as I was the first day that I saw CryptoPunks.
How much do you let the DAO dictate what your decisions are?
So the DAO, anyone who holds an NFT, ultimately is welcome to have creative input. And at some point, once we have like the voting up and running, we will be doing, you know, things where we'll take certain questions to the DAO. Like, I have a lot of like collabs that I want to do, and we can have them like suggest collabs or like, steer the collabs in a different way. The DAO, ultimately, if you are a voter, if you're verified with Bright ID, that's when you can deploy funds, you know, to do grants or to do whatever, ultimately. I would say that, like, the creative direction stuff is more of a suggestion, and the treasury stuff is more binding. Like, that's the idea. It's like, once you're, you know, once you are verified that, like, you are you and you're going to be one person, one vote, then we're going to, you know, then we'll abide by what everybody wants, you know? Like, we already have proposals to do, like, a NFTX vault for the songs, and like, you know, I'm down for it, but like, depending on what people want to do, then we may or may not do that.
Does allowing the DAO to dictate your creative output make you uncomfortable?
No, because like I said, it's not binding, that part. The part
but,
that's
but it, as because it because perhaps it would make you uncomfortable if it was.
Well, I just think it would be less interesting. Because I found that like most people don't give great suggestions is what I found. And sometimes they do, but I found that like, you know, it's more interesting to me what they will do with the money than it is to me what they will do with me with the songs. Mm-hmm. Leave the songs to the professionals, I guess, is like mm-hmm. is the way I'm thinking about it.
So what about the dynamic of like, there's only one of you.
Yeah.
And so like the DAO is really a DAO around like the treasury, not the song creation. What's the dynamic like of you have this one guy who's responsible for the actual inflows of ether into the treasury? What's that like?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that is that, I mean, so we're only 17 days in, so I don't really know what it's like yet. And I would like to get to the point where, you know, part of why I wanted to do one person, one vote, and that includes me, is that I tried to, because it's so me focused, I wanted to give as much power as I could to everyone else, mm-hmm. knowing that I wield, obviously, way outsized influence. I wanted to find a way to, like, to counteract that as much as I could. And so that's the part of the idea behind one person, one vote. But ultimately, you know, it remains to be seen, ultimately, like how people are going to respond to it or what it's going to look like. So far it's been really fun, and I would like to get to the point where it's not just me bringing in the money, because there's a lot of opportunity for other people to if someone got a song placed in a movie or something, that could bring in an enormous amount of money to the DAO. And we have pathways for, because the DAO is a legal co-op, like Spork DAO is. We have pathways where if you do something like that, you can get paid by the DAO in ETH. You can get paid from money directly from the treasury if you bring in. It's called patronage activity. There's this co-op term called patronage activity where things you do that benefit the co-op entitle you to money from the treasury. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just imagine someone being a music licensing person, and you know, there's a lot of songs to choose from. Like listening through and being like, "Oh, I like this one. Like maybe this one could fit here, maybe or something." And then if that happens, all that money, all the royalties and everything flow into the DAO. All the off-chain royalties, I mean, like from Spotify and from the ideally, I would like to get to the point where Paramount Pictures is not doing a deal with me, they're doing a deal with my DAO. And ultimately it's the DAO who has a lawyer who's hammering out the details, and all of that money flows right back into the DAO. And the person who is responsible for that can see some of that upside.
How do you think the mere existence of the DAO impacts the valuation of the NFT songs? Do you think, like, because, like, you could have just pocket all the money for yourself, right? And be a lot more direct.
And yes, I mean, for a long time, that was the plan, right? And
right. And
part of the reason I valued, part of the reason I minted the songs, the original songs, the archive of the songs on December 31st, I had the mint price at 0.2, which is, like, really high for a project like this. But the reason I did that was because that was the number that I needed to feel comfortable to give the rest of this money to the DAO. But I think ultimately it's a long-term prospect, right? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And like right now we're living through this moment that's really interesting in NFTs that I've noticed. And I keep talking about this because it's on my mind. We're living through like it's burgeoning, this like really burgeoning pure meme NFT time that we're living in. Olive Garden was maybe like the first that I noticed. Ghazali is another example of this kid. And now Irene DAO, which is like these three just like pure, almost a reaction to the rallying cry that's been around for the last like 6 months of like, utility, what's the utility of the art? The art needs to have utility. And now there's a reaction to that where like, fuck utility. This is a pure, we're going Dogecoin, people. We're just going like pure meme. It's just a funny fucking thing and we're all getting behind it.
And you're buying it.
And you're buying it. Yeah, yeah, right. So ultimately, I don't know what's going to happen, but I've set up Song A Day in a way that I think, you know, I think in like really long term ways, you know, because of I think about, you know, three years is 1,000 songs, which sounds like a lot, but honestly, man, like the first 1,000 felt like they took forever. The second 1,000 kind of took a while. The third and the 4,000 went like that. They're just like going so fast. So I think about like 3 years in the future when I've literally auctioned off 1,000 songs, and all that money goes into the DAO. What are NFTs even going to look like? Like, is any of the stuff that's around now still going to be around? I don't know, but I've built Song a Day specifically to like to be able to hopefully weather that, weather whatever comes, you know, having lived through the one winter that I did.
Do you see yourself changing the songs that you write and how you write them or how you sing them or what they're about because you now know that there's like a DAO behind this and you're trying to want to be like a profit maxi for on behalf of the DAO?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah. I talk about this even in the that very first talk that the CryptoPunk talk that I was talking about from 2017. I sort of was aware even back then, and I thought what the vector was going to be actually was rarity. I thought the vector was going to be rarity because that's what CryptoPunks was, and that's how people were valuing different CryptoPunks. So I thought, oh, like maybe when I'm doing my song a day, like if I play with an instrument I've never played with, and I do it in a location where I've never been, and I sing about a topic that I've never sung about, and I'm wearing an outfit that I've never worn, like maybe, which I don't think is the case anymore, and it's more about the stories about the space that people want. Now that's not surprising to me in the least, because always the songs that get the most views are the topical songs.
Right.
All of my most viewed songs are either political in nature or about pop culture or whatever. Like those are all the ones that have the most views.
Right.
So songs about crypto, you know, makes perfect sense that those right. would be the ones that people are willing to pay the most for.
I would imagine that like the ENS DAO song, for example,
yeah,
it would be really compelling for the ENS DAO to make an offer on the ENS DAO song.
Well, they own it. It got minted.
Oh, they do.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It got minted. It got minted. You know, I minted all the songs randomly in the drop. Uh-huh. And so somebody got it, but then they bought it off them. They were able to secure it. There's a bunch of ones like that where the people who ultimately the song was about, like they were able to secure it after the fact because I did it randomly. I wanted it to be fair, and that's why I did random. But yeah, they own it. They own it now.
It'd be really interesting strategy to make a bunch of songs about a bunch of DAOs.
Yeah.
And then allow the DAOs to bid for the songs, perhaps even in their native token, so they don't actually have to keep or give up any of their USDC or Ether.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And then your DAO has just a shares of all the other DAOs, and just because you sang a song about them. They kind of have to buy it at that point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and there's, I did a song about Constitution DAO when that was a thing. I've already done a bunch of DAO songs. I have a bunch of like collabs lined up with NFT projects that I love. I should probably do some more DAO aligned things. We could do a bankless one.
Do you allow your songs to be commissioned by projects?
So that is something that I've not explored in this new setup because of the auction nature of the thing. Basically, there's been a few times now in the last couple of weeks people have come to me and I said, well, listen, I can't let you pay me directly. It needs to go to the DAO because if I do it, I'm going to make it. I could do a song outside of Song a Day. You know, it could be like a separate song. Don't really want to do that. Don't really have time to do that. So it would have to be a Song a Day song. And so I was like, you're just gonna have to like bid on it and just hope that no one's bidding against you. And that's fine. And then I'd be like, I guess what I would probably say is like, you know, bid at least like 2 ETH or something. And then I'll do the song for you and you just have to promise that you're going to bid at least 2 ETH. And that's probably how I would do it now if I was going to do that. Yeah. And I'm open to that. I've done a lot of commissions over the years, you know, a ton. That's part of how I made my living. And so as long as it's like something that I don't totally hate, I'd probably do it.
Have any community members from the DAO stepped up to wear a leadership hat?
Yes, they have. It's been super exciting. My friend Boris, who was like the first person to introduce me to crypto, is in the DAO. He's been helping a ton. I have a couple like mods that I picked out, and they have like a couple of them have like some really good technical skill, and they've been like just taking the lead on this voting thing, which is like really helpful. Because it's a conundrum. It's like there's a lot of like things to solve. That's like the most pressing thing right now is getting voting up and running, because we can't do anything until we can vote. It's been amazing. It's been so cool to see that happen, and really gratifying.
Well, Jonathan, if listeners want to go join your DAO or just find out more about what you're up to, where should they go?
Yeah, come to songaday.world. That's the place where every day, right there on the front page, the song is auctioned off.
Wait, so it's you not also... called Songadao?
No, it's songaday.world. We also have songadao.org, which is our discourse okay. place.
All right, so that name is somewhere. Okay, I'm glad about that.
Yeah. Songadao.org. But to see the daily song, you go to songaday.world, where you can link to the OpenSea. Because of all the degens, the songs are like way below mint, so you can get them for real cheap right now. That's the place to go. I also want to plug this hat. I'm currently selling this hat. You have seven. Let's see. Whenever this goes live, when is this going to go live? When? Like
tomorrow.
Roughly. So you have 5 days to order this hat. We'll put the link in the show notes. The songs hat doesn't give you anything other than a really cool hat that says songs on it. And so you can support your love of songs with this hat.
Jonathan, if there's one lesson that you've learned that you wish more people had learned in their lives, what would it be?
Sucking at something is the first step to being kind of good at something.
That's a quote from Adventure Time, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
It's Adventure one of the most wise things that anyone has ever spoken. Jake the dog.
And who in the world really needs to hear that? What cohort of individuals?
I mean, anyone that wants to do anything. I mean, like... there's no anything that you're trying to do, and I have to tell myself this constantly too about things that I want to learn, like anything that you've been thinking about, like, oh, I would like to write songs, or oh, I would like to write a novel, or oh, I'd like to, you know, make podcasts, or oh, I should do blog posts on this, or oh, I want to do Twitter threads, like, you know, just sucking at something is really the first step. You have to go through the sucking it, and it never really stops. But you just have to sort of accept the sucking sometimes. That's it.
The LDR of this episode, you got to accept the sucking.
That's it.
Awesome. Jonathan,
Roll
credits. There we go. Jonathan, thank you for coming on this episode of Layer Zero.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Cheers.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed the video. If you did, head over to Bankless HQ right now to develop your crypto investing skills and learn how to free yourself from banks and gain your financial independence. We recommend joining our daily newsletter, podcast, and community as a Bankless Premium subscriber to get the most out of your Bankless experience. You'll get access to our market analysis, our alpha leaks, and exclusive content, and even the Bankless token for airdrops, raffles, and unlocks. If you're interested in crypto, the Bankless community is where you want to be. Click the link in the description to become a Bankless Premium subscriber today. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the channel for in-depth interviews with industry leaders, Ask Me Anythings, and weekly roll-ups where we summarize the week in crypto and other fantastic content. Thanks everyone for watching and being on the journey as we build out the Bankless Nation.